Michael Savage Show contains adult language, adult content, psychological nudity. Listener discretion is advised.
And now, America's most exciting radio talk show, The Savage Nation. Here is Michael Savage.
Right now, they want to hold our captain for ransom, and we're trying to get him back. We have a coalition warship. They'll be here in 3 hours. So we're just trying to hold them off for 3 more hours, and then we'll have a warship here to help us.
The world must come together to end the scourge of piracy. You know, I think Morocco was the very first country that recognized us, going back a long time, and we worked together to end piracy off of the coast of Morocco all those years ago, and we're going to work together to end this kind of criminal activity anywhere on the high seas.
Well, you don't want to escalate it. You don't want to turn it into the Wild West. And remember, these are crew members who are trained to operate a ship, not military actions. You don't want to arm them to the teeth.
We're going to talk about piracy today in the Savage Nation. Piracy and the weak-kneed response of these pacifist socialists running America. Of course, it's no different than the pacifist socialist George Bush, which is what he was reduced to in the last year of his reign. The fact of the matter is we're going to talk about piracy on the high seas and piracy in the radio. Now, the fact of the matter is the hemorrhoid with ears on Fix News listens to this show daily, and the hemorrhoid with ears stole the entire concept that I gave you in November of 08 on the creation of the U.S. Navy, the establishment of the Leatherneck, etc. But that is not the issue. It's not the issue of the hemorrhoid with ears on Fix News pirating ideas from Michael Savage. The important thing for you to understand is we have no government to protect us at this time. The fact of the matter is Muslim pirates were pirating U.S. cargo ships back in the 1700s. And as a result, the United States Navy created its first warship. And what you don't understand is that it's written in the Quran that all nations which had not acknowledged the Prophet were sinners, whom it was the right and duty of the faithful to plunder and enslave. Now, that's not contemporary writing. That is the writing of the U.S. ambassador of the time, when we had real men, real Americans who believed in America, really. By late 1793, a dozen American ships had been captured, goods stripped, and everyone enslaved. Portugal had offered some armed boats, but American merchants needed an armed American presence to sail with them. The U.S. Navy was born March 1794. 6 naval frigates were authorized, and so began the construction of the United States, the Constitution, the Constellation, and 3 other frigates. And this new military presence helped stiffen American resolve to resist the continuation of tribute payments, which led to the 2 Barbary Wars along the North African coast against Muslim pirates. It was not until 1815 that naval victories ended tribute payments by the United States, although some weakling European nations continued paying to the Muslim pirates until the 1830s. In fact, the United States Marine Corps actions in these wars led to the line to the shores of Tripoli. I also told you, which was lifted by the hemorrhoid with ears on Fix News, that the Marines, who were the armed troops on the ships, had a leather high collar to protect against cutlass slashes, and that led to the nickname Leatherneck for U.S. Marines. What has happened to the U.S. Navy under George Bush and now under Obama is an embarrassment for every United States citizen. They have become floating brothels. They have not fired a shot in an act of war for so long. They are nothing but floating brothels. They are brothels with propellers. They are social enterprises with propellers where inner city kids go to have a lot of fun and get pregnant. And if you don't like these harsh words, then send it to the president. I could care less. We have no Navy. We have a welfare operation with propellers. What is the use of a U.S. Navy that doesn't sink a pirate ship? So I'll give you a constructive idea. Not mine, but it is mine now. How do you protect U.S. merchant ships from these Muslim pirates off the coast of Africa? The same way our merchant fleets were protected in World War II. I'm almost reluctant to tell it to you again because I don't want to hear it tomorrow from someone who listens to the hemorrhoid with ears that he lifted this idea. But here it comes. You run a flotilla called a convoy of merchant ships. The merchant ship convoy is protected by U.S. naval ships that encircle them, and maybe a submarine that does something other than crash into a sandbar. What are the submarines useful for? We're not fighting a nuclear war, thank God. So let a submarine accompany the merchant ships in a flotilla, in a convoy. Stop with the exercises under the Arctic Sea. The pirates are off the coast of Africa, Mr. Obama, and whichever putz is running a Navy right now, looking for his job with Lockheed Martin after he gets out. Whatever. You run a convoy, you run ships around it, and you give an order. Anyone that comes within 1,000 yards, we sink you. We don't even hail you. We don't care who you are. You're going down. You see this flotilla, you're going down. Mr. and Mrs. Somali pirate will sink you and your girlfriend and your wife and your 50 children. You're going down 1,000 yards. Stay away from us. Now, that would be a U.S. Navy. But instead, we have Hillary Clinton, the Secretary of State, giggling. Did you hear her giggle? Play it again, Sam.
The world must come together to end the scourge of piracy. Morocco was the very first country that recognized us, going back a long time. And we worked together to end piracy off of the coast of Morocco all those years ago. And we're going to work together to end this kind of criminal activity anywhere on the high seas.
Well, the criminal activity is occurring in the White House, as far as I'm concerned. They've hijacked this country. They've hijacked the State Department. They've hijacked the Defense Department. They've hijacked the banks. They've hijacked virtually everything in the country to their radical leftist agenda. The American people have been hijacked and screwed royally by this interloper, this phony. And, you know, the only people who can save us are not the Republicans. They're non-existent. There is no Republican opposition. There is no Republican Party. The only people who can save us from this interloper communist in the White House are the Democrats themselves. Now, they're not going to do it because they love America. Politicians love nothing but their own aggrandizement and their own fortunes. No, the only reason they'll do it is because I predict, and you can write it down, I predict a wholesale firing of Democrats in the next election. They will lose congressional seats galore because of their activities. Nobody expected a radical left-wing government to seize power in America, friendly with Castro, kissing a Saudi prince's robes and then saying they didn't. Did you hear that scandal? Well, let me tell you a little bit about it. Obama bowed to an Arab prince on his so-called Euro tour, photographed by the world media. Then Obama's liars, his professional Goebbels team, denied that he bowed to a royal. It reminds me of the horrible joke of a woman who comes home and finds her husband in bed with another woman in her own bed. And she looks shocked, and the husband looks up as he is doing the other woman and says, "Honey, who are you going to believe, me or your own eyes?" And while Obama is doing America, his flacks are saying, "Who are you going to believe, what you've seen in the pictures of him bowing to a Saudi or your own eyes or me?" The fact of the matter is this gesture of a prolonged bow from the waist when our president did something that for which there is no precedent. There is no precedent for a U.S. president to bow to a Saudi or any other royal. None whatsoever. And yet Obama, the servile president, offered King Abdullah a deep and prolonged bow from the waist when he met him at the G2 summit. Now, did you see this in your local paper? No, you did not. But a Spanish TV broadcast picked it up on their television, and it was put up on blogs. It's created an internet stir around the world, but you're not going to read it in your local filthy newspaper rag. The fact of the matter is, no Americans of any position are ever required to bow to royalty. And for Obama to bow to the custodian of the two holy mosques is going to reinforce the fears of millions of Americans that he is secretly a Muslim. Why did he choose to bow only to the Saudi king and not to any other royal? He didn't bow to the Queen of England. For example, Obama did not bow to Queen Elizabeth when he first met her last week in London. Why did he bow to the Saudi king? Ladies and gentlemen, I will let you make your own decision on these topics so that you can call me. 1-800-449-8255. What do you think about my idea that the only way to stop this piracy, there's only one way, and that's power, not a giggling secretary of hate. A giggling secretary of hate is an embarrassment to this world, particularly to America. What do you think of my idea of sending cargo ships over around those infested waters in convoys? The convoys protected by a ring of U.S. warships. You don't need anything bigger than, frankly, the smallest naval warships we have. You don't need anything bigger. However, we do need one submarine to join the flotilla. Do you like my idea of convoys to protect our merchant ships? With a clear and present warning, 1,000 yards, you're sunk. We don't care who you are. This is the Savage Nation. I'll be right back. Savage.
15 men on a dead man's chest. Yo ho ho, and a bottle of rum. Drink and the devil have done for the rest. Yo ho ho, and a bottle of rum.
We are talking about the pacifist socialist president bowing to a Saudi royal. Unprecedented embarrassment, not run by the vermin in the media in America. Because they're keeping you in the dark as to who he really is and where his loyalties really lie. And then the giggling Secretary of State, Hillary Clinton, giggling over the piracy at the high seas while a man's life hangs in the balance. You want me to give a positive suggestion? I've given many in all of my best-selling books. The government pays no attention to the citizenry, or else they would have been acted upon by now. I came up with oil for illegal aliens. Did Bush do it? No, because he's tied into the Mexican government. I have a solution for the piracy. The solution is simple. Send them over in a convoy. Protect the convoy with destroyers or such. Put in one submarine in the convoy. You put outstanding orders. Anyone that comes within 1,000 yards of this flotilla, of course, till you get near the shore, will be shot out of the water. No arrests. No conversation, no reading of rights, kill them. That's the end of piracy. That's my opinion. What's your opinion? Blake on KNEW San Francisco, go ahead, please.
Yeah, my big concern is when we catch these pirates, which we will, we're going to have to read them the Miranda rights. We're going to have to give them a fair and impartial trial, and it's going to cost, I don't know.
Wait. But did you hear my solution, which is to kill them before we give them Miranda rights?
Oh, I agree.
Oh, you're actually agreeing with me. You sure? With Hillary Clinton and the Marxist administration that we have, they'll get a lawyer from NYU who'll say they're actual victims of us.
At our expense.
Yeah, well, okay, I get you. It's why our police got killed in Oakland, California, because of the same pacifist socialist mentality of Barbara Boxer, Dianne Feinstein, Barbara Lee, Ron Dellums, and the other vermin on the left who have told the cops, don't frighten the crackhead during a traffic stop because it might offend the community. And you don't want to shock the community by coming out with a drawn gun. Let him come out with a drawn gun and shoot the two cops in the neck. You know, it's not like that all over America. For example, I'm not going to say where, but I happen to know in certain areas of America, there are no police boards, no police commissions, and they're under strict orders to shoot to kill. And you know what? The crime rates are relatively low. The police still have all the power, not the crack dealers, the crackheads, the gun runners, the smugglers from Mexico, from Central America with drugs. They're shot dead on the highways by certain police. What happened to this country? Where is it going? Why are we kowtowing to pirates? And moreover, the bigger question is, why is the Navy not being used as a U.S. Navy anymore? And I made that point. I got to tell you, I know it's very hard for you to accept. The Navy today is a social enterprise with propellers. I would like someone listening to this show, I'd like one person listening to this show to correct me in my assumptions. I assume, and I don't know of a situation, in the last 5 or so years where this U.S. Navy has ever fired a shot in a war zone or let's say in an act of war. I don't know of one such situation. What is the Navy for? Is it to get children off the streets, give them a uniform and shiny shoes, and let them fornicate down in the boiler room? And then when they get pregnant, make the government raise the child? And if you think that's not going on, it's one of the biggest secrets of the U.S. Navy. I watched the F-A-18 Hornet pilots practicing on the aircraft carrier I was on overnight. They're amongst the most skilled, brave pilots in the world. I don't know of them using the F-A-18s for anything. What use are they? How about launching an F-A-18 off a ship? Oh, there's a Somali pirate ship approaching a merchant ship. Bye-bye, Ahmed. Bye, Ahmed. The 72 virgins are waiting for you. WOR, New York. Sherman, welcome to the program.
Thank God for this show. As usual, you're correct. You're right on the money. The bottom line is this. Yes, they need protection out there. It's embarrassing that these Africans, and these are the same people that come here illegally and run these scams, or they steal your identity. These are the same people that are sneaking over here who don't respect this country. They're doing this because they don't respect us. They don't fear us.
What is there to respect when George Bush went in like, came in like a lion and went out like a lamb, and now we have a president who goes and kisses the robe of the Saudi royal? What does that tell the Somali pirates?
Absolutely. Absolutely.
All right, you made your point, and so did I. Navy is the issue. Washington, D.C., WTNT. Byron, go ahead. You're on the Savage Nation.
Yeah, as a Navy captain with 28 years in the Navy, I really take issue that we're running floating brothels and just a social phenomenon with propellers. I mean, we need some leadership, and I'll give you that. In the olden days, I flew A6 intruders. We used to actually practice taking out sites in Russia.
Byron, I agree with you 100%. My object here is not to ridicule the men on the ships who were told to stand down. My object is to wake the U.S. Navy up to the fact that the American people are sick of spending trillions of dollars on ships that are not used to protect our merchant ships. I hope you understand what I'm trying to do here.
Oh, I understand what you're trying to do, and there is a problem. There are not enough ships. We cannot cover the world's oceans and the responsibility.
Wait, we don't need to cover the world's oceans. I disagree with you on that. Right now, I take the ships that we have and put them where the action is, which is off the coast of Africa, where Muslim pirates are doing what they know best, which is hijacking ships for ransom. That's what Muslim pirates have done for hundreds of years. Kill them.
Savage.
Come together to end the scourge of piracy. You know, I think Morocco was the very first country that recognized us, going back a long time, and we worked together to end piracy off of the coast of Morocco all those years ago. And
can you believe this is the Secretary of State, another phony, laughing about piracy instead of launching a naval missile at them? Now, there's another story that you have to pay attention to. I'm sorry there's so much news on the Savage Nation today, but I don't know how to break the news to you other than tell you it's horrible. Now, you heard that Obama wants to grant amnesty to the 30 million illegal aliens. And make no mistake, it's not 10 million. There are approximately 30 million illegal aliens in America. We have huge unemployment. We have a busted economy. They're raising taxes. And they want to grant amnesty to these 30 million leeches. They will then be able to bring in family members from around the globe. It's the end of America. Now, you know that Obama was going to do this. You knew this. You know who he is. It's bust the nation. Just as Theodore Roosevelt once went after the trusts to bust the trusts, this man's goal is to bust the national sovereignty of America. But here's something you don't know. Here's something Michael Savage dug up. Paying attention, hemorrhoid with ears? Hemorrhoid with ears, come in. This is Michael Savage giving you a little bit for your show tomorrow in between the... Did you know who Obama hired as the chief architect of his amnesty for illegal aliens policy? None other than Cecilia Munoz, who was the head of La Raza. Now, La Raza means the race. And they were rewarded by Obama in that they took the chief architect of this racist group, La Raza, who is now a policy analyst within the West Wing itself. put that into your pipe and smoke it, you potheads. When you wake up enslaved in your own nation, you will know that I, Michael Savage, Paul Revere, try to warn you. 1-800-449-8255. You got many topics to discuss. What is the FBI doing there with the hostage thing? This is not a police action. Again, you don't even understand what the FBI is for. It's not for this. This is a military deal. The U.S. Navy is supposed to blow the pirates out of the water. End of story. But no, we have a laughing Secretary of State. So I've come up with an answer, which is convoy system. But, of course, the U.S. government won't do that. Makes you wonder, doesn't it? If you care to comment about this, you can at 1-800-449-8255. I mean, so many things are melting down so fast, it's unbelievable. Here's another story you may have missed. You know, Brown University used to be a kind of quasi Ivy League school, kind of sort of a distant Ivy League school, prided itself on God knows what, probably a large endowment from slave runners that were left for a couple hundred years. Brown University has now eliminated Columbus Day, replacing it with the title Fall Weekend. This was as a result of an ethnic minority sophomore. You ever heard the word sophomoric? Brown University is taking the Columbus Day out of Columbus Day weekend, replacing it with Fall Weekend. Goodbye, Columbus at Brown University. And I will have a list of future holidays and future holiday names for you shortly from all of these pinko colleges in the United States of America. Here is another story that the local newspaper in San Francisco won't cover, which is a shocker. I know that they're worthless garbage. That I know. I know they're going out of business. That we know. I know it's losing $1 million, what is it, a week? That we know. We know it's left-wing rubbish that belongs on a college campus like Brown. That we know. But you'd think they'd have a modicum of news in the local paper? Remember last year, a man, Anthony Bologna, 48, and his two sons, Michael, 20, and Matthew, 16, were coming home from a picnic when they were shot to death by Salvadoran national Edwin Ramos? And it turned out that the mayor of San Francisco had a sanctuary policy that permitted this to happen? Well, the family is suing the San Francisco sanctuary law, blaming it for the murder of the father and sons. I donated money to the mother. She came on the show. She made my heart. My heart was ripped out when she came on, Mrs. Bologna. I couldn't take it. The family is suing. Now, why is the local newspaper not even running the story? This is a shocking abandonment of any principle of journalism. But would you expect anything else from a left-wing, useless, garbage newspaper like the Chronicle? San Diego, Carolyn, you're on the Savage Nation.
Dr. Savage.
Yes, go ahead, please.
Sorry. I'm just stunned. You're amazing. We love you. I can't say enough good. Just wanted to tell you, I have a son in the Navy in San Diego, based in San Diego, about ready to get out. And some of the stories he tells me just makes my husband...
All right, you'll have to speak louder. I'm getting a bad echo in your voice. Give me one story.
How about the fact that you can get married in the Navy, not have to live with the person as husband and wife. Say, for instance, my son said, I need $1,500. I don't want to live in the barracks. I'd like to live out of the barracks in El Cajon. But housing is expensive, so I'm going to hook up with one of the females on the ship, you know, another enlisted female.
Yeah.
We're going to get married on paper. We get $1,500 towards housing. You live where you live.
That's a result of bringing the women on the ship.
But no,
and when they get pregnant, the Navy provides full care for these breeders.
To tell you, that was
you want me to mince words? I'm not going to mince words. That's why we can't fire a shot at the Somali pirates. It's a floating brothel.
Savage, not to interrupt, but here's another story he said.
The Navy has become a floating brothel. I stick by those words. Put it on YouTube. 1-800-449-8255. Making one friend at a time on the Savage Nation. Every day going out of my way to make friends wherever I can find them. Now today, seeking friends in the U.S. Navy. Modesto, California. Cindy, welcome to the program.
Hello. Hey, I just want to make a comment about him kissing the robe of the Saudi royal.
Yes.
My idea is maybe that he was publicly thanking him for funding his way to the White House.
That's what I thought last week. After all, there was almost $1 billion, a lot of it in unmarked funds that came into Obama's hands, and it was bundled. Nobody knows where it came from. But what about the rumors that he is Muslim or has loyalties in the Muslim faith? Wouldn't that indicate that he was bowing down to his king, in essence?
I think he's not loyal to us. He's loyal to them.
I believe you're 100% right. That's how I see it. I don't care what the left wing is spinning. Thank you. I think the man made an embarrassment of himself and of the U.S. Plays bones, 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 Billy Bones. They don't want to talk about any of this. They're asleep. I guess they want to talk about which slut slipped on a banana peel in Hollywood or Alcoholics Anonymous or something like that.
And what of this cutlass so carelessly?
No, come on. Give me the best part, would you please? For God's bones. Sakes.
Bones, Billy Bones.
Off to Davy Jones. Everybody sing along. Follow the Bouncing Navy. Turn it off. I'm in a rotten mood today. I mean, there's so much bad news, it gets worse by the day. The giggling Hillary, to me, says it all. I don't know whether to say thank God she didn't become president, or I don't know what would have been worse, a giggling president or a giggling secretary of state. I really don't know. I just don't know who it would have been worse. Now they're engaging with Iran. Hillary Clinton says engaging Iran makes sense. Listen to clip 11. 11. 11.
We believe that, pursuing very careful engagement on a range of issues that affect our interests and the interests of the world with Iran makes sense.
Oh, really? They make sense. Let's hear clip 12.
We believe that, pursuing very careful engagement on a range
of
issues.
That's 11, guys. Hold it. Slow down. Okay. Go to 13. 1-3. 1-3.
Any breakthrough will be the result of the collective efforts of all the parties, including Iran.
So there's Robert Woods, Pinko, State Department spokesmouth, Robert Woods, saying that Iran is now included at the table. So in other words, the Hitler of our time, Ahmadinejad, has won. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And here's the communist, Barbara Lee, so-called Democrat from so-called California, coming back, lapping up her visit with the murderer, Fidel Castro, in clip 16.
Our conclusion, of course, is that given the new direction in our foreign policy, that it's time to look at a new direction in our policy toward Cuba. The 50-year embargo just hasn't worked. Former President Fidel Castro was very engaging, very energetic, discussed a wide range of issues. Bottom line is we believe that it's time to open
bottom
dialogue.
Line is you should be in a slammer in an orange jumpsuit. That's the bottom line. You disloyal thing, you. You and the entire Congressional Black Caucus, as far as I'm concerned, have shown your true stripes. And it's not black. Your true color was shown. It's red, not black. Let me tell you, I've never seen anything like this. It's one thing to visit Cuba and come back and talk about the police state, talk about the people in prison, talk about the people killed by these murderers. But it's another thing to come back and become a pimp for them. A pimp for the Castro murderers. You expect anything else from Barbara Lee? You expect anything else from this communist? I don't. They are giving you exactly what you expected from Obama. Going to Cuba and coming back about wonderful, wonderful life in Cuba and how we caused all of the problems. Listen, we are having a slow, rapid invasion of communism into this country at a rate that I never thought could have happened. I thought that at least there'd be Republican opposition. I never expected opposition from the vermin in the media. Never. Not for a million years. I expected some opposition from the so-called Republicans. They're non-existent. There's no party. It's the radical communists in the Obama administration versus the American people. There is no party to represent us, is there? Tell me who represents you. New York, WOR, on which topic do you call, Diane? Welcome to the program.
Thank you, Dr. Savage. Hillary Clinton, the Secretary of State, you played her clip, and she's giggling. That's like my going to a wake, giving my condolences to the family of the dead person, going up to the coffin and laughing. We have an American captain.
That's right, an American captive. We had a ship seized by Muslim Somali pirates, and she's giggling about it.
And she's giggling. I have no words.
No, the weakness and the pacifism and the supine nature of this government is frightening. The only people they're tough with are the American people who don't want to bow down to the hammer and sickle. Thanks for the call. New York, Mike, welcome to the program from OR. Go ahead, please.
Hi, Michael. You know, if you parse Clinton's sentence, it's amazing. First, she has to kiss the butt of the Moroccans, the Arabs, by saying they were the first ones to recognize us. And then she says it was just a criminal act. Ha, ha, ha. I mean, her husband wanted to make 9/11 a criminal act, too. I mean, it's an act of war. I mean, am I missing something?
No, you're not missing something. These people are crazy. Look, Mike, I wrote a book called Liberalism is a Mental Disorder, and I knew it was true then, but I didn't know that the disease would metastasize as rapidly as it has to have produced a mentally deranged administration.
Even one of the congressional black caucus members was saying, well, I was too young to remember the Cuban revolution, so it doesn't really matter anymore. And it's like, what?
Doesn't matter? How about all the people that were killed by this murderer? Thanks for the call. I mean, you know, I had on my website, it's gone now, Beowulf, ask Art to put it back up, from the Miami Herald. There was an article about the actual victims of the Castro murderers that I actually am going to read for you on the show, because you shouldn't forget who they are. Never mind that they're being made into something that they're not. They are murderers. They're gangsters. They took over Cuba. They robbed everything from the people. All they gave them was health care. You know, I got to go back, because I remember a long time ago there was a communist on a campus that I was a graduate student at. He was a communist doctor, a real piece of work. He used to steal drugs out of the infirmary. In fact, I knew a guy who was supposedly a friend of mine who loved that idea so much that if you got a medical degree, you could steal drugs out of the infirmary, that he became a doctor himself. I think he's a drug addict somewhere in the hills of Oakland or Berkeley right now. I haven't kept up with him. I dumped him 30 years ago. But this commie doctor used to get up on the campus when I was a grad student, and he used to scream through a megaphone about how wonderful Cuba was because they had given all of the peasants health care. Now, as I've reminded you on this show many times, health care is one thing. Cuban health care is quite another. In fact, when the great leader himself got sick, he didn't use a Cuban doctor, did he? He used a doctor from Spain, so they said it was probably a Jewish doctor from the University of Miami. North Carolina, Manny, you're on the Savage Nation. Go ahead, please.
Michael, I spent 20 years in the Navy. I just want to tell you the idea of following the ships with the Navy ships to destroy the pirates is great. Back in 1988, I was in the Persian Gulf with the Navy, and our job was to protect the ships that were carrying oil from Kuwait during the Iran-Iraq.
All right, so why is the Navy not being used as a Navy now other than as a floating brothel?
Because it's a bunch of crying babies in the Navy. It's not the Navy anymore.
Mm, you got that right. Thank you. The Navy. When have they fired a shot in anger? When have they last fired a shot in anger? Nothing. Zero. Worthless. I think that we should sink our naval ships and convert them into peace centers. Well, I don't mean actually sink them. I think we should keep one or two old ships somewhere because we don't want to frighten the Muslims in Somalia. I think that the ship should be permanently ported. I think that the engines should be permanently fused. I think the guns and the missiles should be welded shut. And I think they should be turned into homeless shelters. And then, but of course, I wouldn't take away the uniforms from the captains and all of that, and the girls down below in the boiler room when they come up disheveled from their sex acts. I would use the ships as welfare centers in all the ports of America, even the world. I mean, we could port some of these ships in Yemen themselves and use them as houses of ill repute for the Yemenites in order to show them that we mean them no harm. 1-800-449-8255, New York, WOR, Rob, go ahead, please.
Hi, Dr. Savage. Hey, you know, my point is, you know, the other day, Barack Obama didn't want to offend Germany, but he has no problem offending us. He has no problem offending, you know, our veterans by not going to visit, you know, the site. And here's the same thing with Americans on a ship and not defending them. You know,
he's a total and absolute failure as a president. He's an interloper. He's a fraud. And everything he is doing indicates that to anybody with a brain and a modicum of understanding of history. No American president has ever bowed to a Saudi royal, to any royal, by the way, ever. Why did he do it? And why did he not bow? And I'd say, well, he was doing it out of respect. That's just the point. Why did he not bow to Queen Elizabeth? And why did they give the queen a couple of Tinker toys? Anything to do with race? Thanks for the call. I'll be right back. Savage. About three things in the Savage Nation. Obama bowing to the prince and it not being shown in your local newspaper. Unprecedented servility by a U.S. president. The Somali pirates not being attacked by the U.S. Navy. And killing Columbus Day at Brown University, where they're now calling it Fall Weekend. Fall Weekend. So-called Brown University ended Columbus Day because it was offensive to some of the ethnic minorities. Instead, they're going to call it Fall Weekend because Christopher Columbus was apparently mean to the Native Americans. And that's not consistent with values at Brown. The values of Brown University and other college campuses, of course, that are consistent with these universities. The values are watching pornography and learning how to put a condom on a plantain. And I say we could use more Columbus and less plantain on the campuses. But if you think this is a laughing matter, perhaps it is. I think it's more than a laughing matter. I think it's a nightmare. Now, why would you give any money to Brown University? Why would you give them a nickel if you have money? Why do you give endowments to these people? Most of the money to these universities comes from successful business people who I think by and large are conservative. I wouldn't give these universities a dime. I'm a fairly well-off man. I'm not going to leave my alma mater 10 cents. I won't leave the University of California at Berkeley a dime. I'll leave every dime probably to an animal shelter or animal rights groups, and I don't mean PETA at all. But people who actually do things, they're to me, they're saints to me as far as I'm concerned. I wouldn't leave 10 cents to the University of California where I earned my PhD. I wouldn't leave a nickel to Queens College where I earned my bachelor's degree. I wouldn't leave a red cent. I wouldn't leave a coconut to the University of Hawaii where I did some of the greatest work the university has ever seen. I wouldn't give them 10 cents to promote their left-wing agenda, not a nickel. And I got to tell you, you can control what goes on in this country. But the main topic is the Navy and the pirates and how the mighty have fallen. Go to michaelsavage.com and read, but have a stiff drink first.
Savage.
Warning. The Michael Savage Show contains adult language, adult content, psychological nudity. Listener discretion is advised.
And now, America's most exciting radio talk show, The Savage Nation. Here is Michael Savage.
Scourge of piracy. You know, I think Morocco was the very first country that recognized us, going back a long time, and we worked together to end piracy off of the coast of Morocco all those years ago, and we're going to work together to end this kind of criminal activity anywhere on the high seas.
I never heard anything like this. Either she's crazy, something's wrong with this picture. Why the hysterical giggling laughter during an act of piracy, which is an act of war? I want to remind you the U.S. Navy was created to fight piracy. I told you that last November. It was stolen by the hemorrhoid with ears. I understand that. The hemorrhoid with ears has no original ideas, never went to college. That's what you get from a ripoff artist like that. He's not the issue. The issue is this government being ripped off by these left-wing socialists including Hillary Clinton, who should be ashamed of herself for laughing at a time like this. And moreover, the Navy itself has become useless because it's not being used as it was created to be used for. The Navy was created to protect merchant ships. It can't even protect itself anymore, so far as I can tell. Now, there's another issue. We have an open communist, Barbara Lee, from California, who went to Cuba with a bunch of other former black radicals, current black radicals, Black Panthers included, who are now legitimate politicians, who are looking for the day when this has become a Cuba, a big Cuba, a total communist government. And these seven Democrats from the so-called Congressional Black Caucus come back glowing about the killer brothers. Play Barbara Lee.
Former President Fidel Castro was very engaging, very energetic, discussed a wide...
All right, let's turn her off because I feel like I'm listening to a spider. There's an article that I linked up from the Miami Herald on michaelsavage.com where there's a large Cuban community where they know who this murderous group of bums are. The Cubans of the Miami, Florida area know who these killers are. Unfortunately, the Black Caucus could care less about these murderers. They'd love to see the poison, the red poison, spread into America. There's an article by Miriam Marquez on lawmakers' Cuba concerns are misplaced. And she says this: if only the seven Black Caucuseers had met with even one prisoner of conscience or one of the wives, mothers, daughters, or sisters of the 75 independent journalists, librarians, and human rights advocates imprisoned in Cuba's Black Spring of 03, or the seven Black Caucuseers could have traveled 3 hours from Havana to see the hunger-striking dissidents led by Jorge Luis Antunez Garcia in Placitas, or they could have asked to see Oscar Elias Bisquet, a doctor serving 25 years in prison for following the peaceful resistance of Martin Luther King Jr. Now listen to the rest of this. Or one of the mothers of three young men who were tried in a day and killed the next by firing squad in 2003 for trying to hijack a ferry from Havana Harbor. No passenger was hurt, but that didn't stop the Cuban government from killing them and sending a horrible message to the country's Afro-Cuban masses. And I want to reiterate that the Castro brothers are of European descent. They have a racist administration in which there are no people of African descent. It is probably the most racist administration in the Western Hemisphere, by the way. But this is ironic that these communist congressional black caucuseers would go there and overlook their racial, let us say, concerns in order to promote their political concerns. In other words, when it comes right down to it, communism trumps the race. But no. The black U.S. lawmakers' concerns weren't for the 300-plus Cuban prisoners of conscience listed by Amnesty International or the hundreds of dissidents working from their homes under the watch of a totalitarian regime in Cuba, or the lack of civil rights in a country with a majority black and mixed-race population ruled by an overwhelmingly white gerontocracy. You don't know any of this. You don't read any of this in your slimy, filthy, worthless rags that are going out of business. You don't read any of it. Which is how an interloper phony, this college professor bum, could become the president of the greatest nation on earth and steal it right from under your noses. Mississippi, Melissa, welcome to the Savage Nation.
Hi, thank you, Dr. Savage, for taking my call. It's an honor to speak to you today. Just wanted to say I had an experience. My husband and I actually went to Cuba last year. And as vacationers, you've got to love the irony of that. And watching what is happening to our country and seeing the similarities of how these people live and what possibly...
Cuba was stolen from the people under the guise of overthrowing Batista, the dictator. But their conditions have actually gotten immediately worse. The only thing he gave them was rotten, stinking third world health care. But these two criminals stole all the wealth of the country.
Listen, they continue to see...
The Castro brothers are amongst the wealthiest men on earth. Do you know that?
Oh, absolutely. They are taking their money monthly.
But that's how communism works. The oligarchs steal all of the money.
And it's sad, Dr. Savage.
But, Melissa, you got to go to the article on michaelsavage.com written by this wonderful woman, Miriam Marquez. Beowulf, you should get her on the show tomorrow for a segment, because most Americans don't know that the country is run by white, old white men, Castro and his cronies, and there are virtually no Afro-Cubans in the administration of Fidel. You won't read that. And what's the irony is that black caucus members go there and they don't pay any attention to that on a so-called fact-finding mission. The Clueless Seven, led by Rep. Barbara Lee, a known communist, didn't make a fuss about 50 years of the Castro brothers' rule, the human rights violations, or the escalating and disproportionate number of black Cubans held behind bars. Indeed, Rep. Bobby Rush, a former Black Panther, could only show his, quote, empathy for the suffering of political prisoners as he referred to the five spies. This is what happens to any race when they are communists. They put their own racial considerations aside for the greater good of the Communist Party. And what's interesting to me is that many of you who listen to this show, or some of you, are of African-American or of African descent. And you know very well that I know what's going on in this world, more so than these seven communists who went over there. They are ashamed to you, the people, of all people who should be embarrassed by the black caucus. It's the black American for understanding finally who they really are. Houston, Brad, welcome to the program. Go ahead, please.
Hey, Mike. I heard you speaking earlier. Did one of the Congress members actually say that they weren't around, so it didn't matter to them what happened?
Yes, they weren't around. I think Bobby Rush, the Black Panther, said he wasn't around, so he doesn't know what happened.
These are the same people that say, that remind us daily that we cannot forget about slavery. That
they're,
we
liars. Can... they're liars! They're liars! They're open, naked, communist liars. But they have a complicit American press.
Yeah.
For whom a lie is a good lie if it's told by a communist, but it's a real lie if it's told by anybody else. I'm so livid right now, I'm going to stop talking for a minute. Obama had no time to go to the graves at Normandy, but he had time to go to a mosque in Turkey. He had time to kiss the robes and bow to the Saudi prince. It's astonishing. It's going on right in front of your eyes. Right in front of your eyes. Albany, New York. Tim, welcome to the program. Go ahead, please.
Hey, Dr. Savage. An honor and a pleasure.
All right, why don't you say what you really want? Don't set me up. Please, I'm not the hemorrhoid with ears. Go ahead.
Hi, I was calling in reference to your comment about Brown University talking about changing their Columbus Day weekend to fall weekend.
And stop talking with a rising inflection. You're not on a college campus.
I went to SUNY Oneonta, and we always called it Columbus Day weekend. But I don't think it really matters. What does it matter if we call Christmas vacation winter vacation, or if we call Easter vacation spring vacation? It doesn't matter.
Well, it doesn't matter to you because you're a man without a country.
I'm a man with a country.
No, you're not. You have no country. You're a man without a country. You're a man without a spine. So to you, you shouldn't even be called a man. You should have a generic name for you, protoplasm with ears. According to you, you spineless nobody, maybe we should change Veterans Day to Baby Killers Day. Does that work for you? How about calling Christmas Crusader Day in order to placate Obama's controllers in Saudi Arabia? How about changing Martin Luther King Jr. Day to the Greatest Man Who Ever Lived Day? How about changing Memorial Day to Good Riddance to Warmongers Day? How about changing Jewish New Year Day to Palestinian Memorial Day? How about changing Election Day to a Freedom and Reconciliation Day? Would you like that? Would you like that, my friends? Because that's what's coming unless you stand up to these left-wing slime. I'll be right back.
Savage.
About the current U.S. Navy, which is a disgrace, unable to act to defend our merchant ships because of the panty wastes who run the U.S. Navy and the congressmen and senators who control their budgets. I'd cut off every nickel to the Navy. It's worthless. And the U.S. Navy, there's no need for it. Now, this doesn't mean we don't have able-bodied seamen who are willing to fight. But what's the good of them if they're not able to fight because the people who control their purse strings tell them that the money comes with certain conditions, such as never using a missile in anger, never using a 20-millimeter cannon. Instead, they say use a water gun. You hear this? Even the merchant ships could be armed with 20-millimeter cannon. World War II, the merchant ships built in shipyards in California. I visited the great shipyards. Even they had cannons on the foredeck. Even they had defensive weapons on their ships. But no, now they tell them to use a water cannon. I'm surprised Obama hasn't said that we must end using water cannons on our merchant ships. We should give them instead water balloons. Because you don't want to offend any of these pirates. You certainly don't want to offend the pirates by using water cannons. In fact, it may be an act of disrespect for their religion to use a water cannon, while a water balloon would be perfectly acceptable to them. Because a water balloon shows that you were a friendly nation. Frightening. And not a word from anybody in the Republican Party. That's the shocker. I thought that at least for their own reasons they'd be saying something. They don't exist. We're also talking about the criminal Castro brothers, the lack of human rights in Cuba, and the amazing lack of discussion in American media and American media about the fact that there are no Afro-Cubans in the leadership positions in Cuba, that it's run by a group of old imperialistic white men who are communists in this case. Now you say, how can you be a communist and imperialist? Oh, study your history, idiots. Two of the wealthiest men in the Western Hemisphere, the Castro brothers, they stole all of the nation's wealth, and there are no Africans in their cabinet. The Africans, by the way, are disproportionately amongst the human rights prisoners in Cuba. And here we have a black caucus going over there, and they don't even notice that. You want to talk about any of this? You can call the Savage Nation. You can call me at 1-800-449-8255. Hartford, Connecticut. Bill, you're up. Go ahead, please.
Michael, I have an idea. The U.S. Navy needs to take some lessons from an old duck hunter, set out some decoys, and when these vermin swoop in to take the bait, blast them to kingdom come.
But wait, why do we need to use decoys? Why not use my idea? Send merchant vessels out in a convoy, protect the convoy with U.S. naval warships, and sink anyone that comes within 1,000 yards of them in an open sea.
That'll work, too.
What's wrong with that?
Nothing, as long as...
What is wrong with that? That's what the Navy's for, to protect the merchant fleets, protect the homeland. What in the world is wrong with everybody?
The world.
I feel as though I'm living in a crazy land where nobody understands anything anymore. Now, if I have to be the last man in the American media who understands what we're doing wrong and how to do it right, then so be it. I will do it. I will do it. And I will do it. Houston, Texas, Don, your opinion. Go ahead, please.
Yes, I like your idea about the armed naval convoy escorts. However, there's a logistically simpler solution that you alluded to. In World War II, there was a branch of the U.S. Navy called the Naval Armed Guard, which were platoons or companies of Marines and sailors who were assigned to civilian merchant ships, and they mounted 5-inch guns on the ships and under rules of naval.
Well, you know something? Look, you only need a 5-inch gun. A 4-inch gun could reach them 1,000 yards away, for God's sakes.
For 50 caliber machine guns.
Yeah, yeah. How about the Gatling gun that most ships carry along with their missile weaponry? They all have Gatling guns to chop up an enemy who is coming too close to them. Why not use a Gatling gun and chop up these little rowboats with RPGs on them?
And I would think that President Obama, if he can take over GM and tell the CEO to resign, that he would have the authority to go to the civilian shipping services and say, we're going to put these teams on your ships. And
I had an eerie feeling when I heard one of the owners of one of these ships say that we shouldn't put armed guards on the ship. I had a weird feeling that he actually wants the insurance payment because he may be running bum cargo in there. And he actually wants it to be hijacked to collect on the insurance. Why is that not a possibility?
I hadn't thought of that.
Well, no one thinks of anything. Why, you think every ship owner is honest? Maybe the guy's running a cargo that isn't even listed on the manifest. I mean, garbage. In other words, he's got garbage cargo, and he overinsures it, and he wants the pirates to hijack it, so he collects the insurance. What, I have to figure that out? The FBI can't figure that one out? What are they doing there anyway? What are they doing there? We need them in Minneapolis and San Francisco. That's where we need the FBI, watching the money transfers to Yemen and Somalia from all of the wonderful immigrants that we brought in who didn't know how to use toilet paper, but they knew how to make a plastic bomb. A toilet paper they never wiped their butts with, but they know how to make a plastic bomb to put in a mall.
Savage.
Well, you don't want to escalate it. You don't want to turn it into the Wild West. And remember, these are crew members who are trained to operate a ship, not military actions. You don't want to arm them to the teeth.
All right. So there's a ship owner saying you don't want to give any weapons to the ship owner, to the ship crew, the ship's crew. And then you have a U.S. Navy saying that they're more interested in social service than they are in war service. And so now we have an act of hostility on the high seas, which is an act of war, by the way. Piracy is an act of war. And here is our giggling Secretary of State, the totally and absolutely incompetent Hillary Clinton. Listen to it again.
The world must come together to end the scourge of piracy. You know, I think Morocco was the very first country that recognized us going back a long time. And we worked together to end piracy off of the coast of Morocco all those years ago. And we're going to work together to end this kind of criminal activity anywhere on the high seas.
Isn't that nice to have a feminist running the State Department giggling in a time of need? That must make the wife of the captain really feel safe and good inside that she has a woman, Secretary of State, giggling as her husband is held captive by these vermin. Now, the fact of the matter is there's a solution to the problem, which is military. There's only one solution to these Muslim pirates. That's power. And, of course, this could have been prevented. It happened last year, and I said what should be done. Now I've come up with a new idea that will be stolen tomorrow, either by Wallbanger, the golfer, or the hemorrhoid with ears, or someone else. But go ahead, make my day and steal it, because my people listen. And that is the convoy system from World War II. You take the ships, the merchant ships, you run them in a convoy, you protect them with some very, very, you know, the lowest grade of U.S. naval ship could protect them, for God's sakes. You don't need an aircraft carrier because you're not fighting airplanes. You don't need battleships, which are non-existent anymore anyway. You don't even need heavy cruisers. You need the smaller ships we have, something on the level of a frigate or a destroyer. And you don't need many of them, by the way. Two of them will do in a convoy. Because the technology is so awesome. A radar blip, 1,000 yards away, disappears in a few seconds. And you put out a notice, 1,000 yards, unidentified, you're dead. Goodbye, the 72 virgins await you, bye-bye. And that's the end of the story. What is a Navy for? No one could disagree with me. Nobody could disagree with this if they had brains. Nobody, the most ardent leftist listening to this, could not disagree with that unless they're insane. But now we sent out the FBI, you hear this, to negotiate with these. What is the FBI doing there? We don't need them there. The FBI was created for domestic work. And this is an extension of the FBI's power that never should have happened. It was granted by Clinton, by the way, I think, for the first time. Their forensics are excellent, probably better than any other, probably much better than the U.S. military, which is busy prosecuting Marines. And you can't have the Naval Intelligence Service actually doing their job. No, the NCIS has to instead try to see if they can crucify a U.S. Marine rather than prevent an act like this. The whole thing's upside down. It's a day like today that makes me very, very angry and upset, frankly. U.S. Navy, though, don't worry, has a P-3 Orion surveillance aircraft up there, and they have it on a lifetime video for the bums in Washington to watch, the drunken admirals with the TV screen sitting there in Washington or wherever they are, Pensacola, getting ready for their retirement pay and a nice job in the defense business. And, you know, you don't want to fire a weapon in an act of hostility here because it may backfire on you if you actually use the Navy for what it's for instead of using the Navy as a social service arm of the U.S. government. 1-800-449-8255. Sacramento, Andrew, you're up on the Savage Nation. Go ahead, please.
Hey, Dr. Savage, I wanted your opinion about something. It seems like we must be the laughingstock of the world right now with the wide display of weakness. I find it hard to believe that intelligent people, supposedly, like our administration, believe that pandering to places like Pyongyang or Tehran or Somali pirates is really the way to get what you want. So either...
They're intelligent, but their agenda trumps their so-called intelligence. They have a radicalized view of the world, and they don't understand that the very mentality that they have is why North Korea dared launch, why the Iranians continue to move towards making a bomb, why the pirates have seized another ship. It's because Obama has shown himself to be an appeaser, an apologizer. The fact of the matter is even the Republicans saluted him, Andrew. Of course, you wouldn't expect the complicit press to point out that the man was a complete flop in Europe, would you?
No.
But you wouldn't expect losers in the media to show you that the man was a complete loser, a Neville Chamberlain. No, you wouldn't expect that. The fact of the matter is his trip was a disaster and a failure. They're laughing at him all over the world. Why are we sensitive to local culture? The barbarity in much of the world is from Islam, which is a political ideology, not a theology. You want me to go into this? Female genital mutilation, child brides, deprivation of rights to non-Muslims and women, rabid religious persecutions, slavery. This is all part and parcel of radical Islam. While in Turkey, B.O. went to a mosque, and he had time to take off his shoes. He did not have time to go to Normandy and stand before the graves of the men who gave him his freedom and his power to be president. This man represents a danger to our freedom itself. Never mind a danger to our nation. B.O. represents a danger to our freedom and our very way of life. We don't know where this is going to end. This, of course, is a sequel to the obsequious Jimmy Carter. But I don't know if the sequel will be as good as the original or worse. B.O. is a disaster. He was a failure on his European trip. Obama has shown the Islamic world that we are second to them, whether you know it or not. That's why the pirates are acting out. Oregon Don, you're on the Savage Nation. Go ahead, please.
Yeah, I just wanted to say that it sickens me that Obama's degraded the office of the presidency by bowing to the king of Saudi Arabia. And even further, it sickens me that in his European Union speech, he told him that we were not a nation of Christians or Jews or Muslims. But
no, the man was a disastrous failure and appeaser. But that's what you get from a leftist college professor who is suddenly foisted into the position of being president of a great nation. He is living on the sacrifice of tens of thousands of men who died for our freedom. He is president because of their sacrifice, and here he spits on their grave.
Makes me sick to my stomach that this man...
Well, sick to your stomach is wonderful. Where are the Republicans? A bunch of worthless criminals in checked pants. San Francisco, KNEW. Sarah, go ahead, please.
Michael, there is no difference between the Castro brothers or the mullahs in Iran. You have not seen a communist leader, a Marxist person that is ahead of a country that lives in a poverty. There is an elite rule and there is a mass rule. The mass is going
to
live in...
Sarah, listen to me. In 100 days, Obama has called Americans arrogant, divisive, cowards, and racist. He is no different than Reverend Wright. He is spewing the hatred of the reverend at whose feet he sat for 20 years. He is constantly giving us a sermon. He is always wagging his finger at us. He is an arrogant, dangerous man.
Absolutely.
There's nothing more I can say. Nothing more I can say about this man that I haven't said. The man is not a snake oil salesman. He is a naked communist. He took down Churchill's bust from the White House. Will he be putting up Chamberlain's bust in the White House? Can you think that the greatness of this country is being improved under this man? But the real astonishment here for me is that the Republicans have become non-existent and shown themselves to be of absolutely no value. to the American conservative voter. None. There is not a single Republican that I know of who has spoken out against this appeaser in chief, has spoken out against Hillary giggling during this act of piracy. Where is the Republican opposition? What has happened to them? I thought that after Obama won, if he would win, that at least the Republicans would play act at being conservative again. They've given up on that. They don't even play act at it anymore. They're not even there. They're non-existent. They're non-existent. It's unbelievable to me that these black caucus members can go to the criminal Castro regime where human rights don't exist, where there are no African Americans in Castro's cabinet, and say one word about the racism of Cuba, but they didn't say anything. They hailed the criminal Castro brothers. Astounding. Just astounding what's going on right in front of your eyes. And there are no Republicans. No Republicans whatsoever. But it's interesting to see that Reagan's mouthpiece, a so-called speechwriter, and I think chief of staff, it says Reagan mouthpieces. It should tell audience to say Reagan mouthpiece. I'm on michaelsavage.com. There's an article about a Reagan mouthpiece now singing Obama's praises. It's amazing. This creep, I think his name is Ed Rollins. I never trusted him from the beginning. He always looked like a two-bit phony to me. Another bartender with a tie. I trust the bartender more than I ever trusted a guy like this. Ed Rollins, senior political contributor for CNN. Turns out he was political director for Ronald Reagan. And wait, chairman of the National Republican Congressional Committee, which explains why the man is glorifying Obama. Can you believe it? Ed Rollins, chairman of the National Republican Congressional Committee, gets up there and says Obama hit a home run in Europe. Performs superbly in the role of world leader. So now you understand why the Republican Party is such a laughing stock and why nobody will ever vote for a Republican again. Unbelievable. I'll be right back.
Savage.
The world must come together to end the scourge of piracy. You know, I think Morocco was the very first country that recognized us, going back a long time. And we worked together to end piracy off of the coast of Morocco all those years ago. And we're going to work together to end this kind of criminal activity anywhere on the high seas.
I'm shocked that you don't hear this for what it is. A giggling Secretary of State with an outright act of war. I mean, seizing a ship by... piracy is an act of war. Check your rule books. Now, that's true, by the way. That was true until Clinton became president. And, of course, under Bush, it was no different. He also became passive. The Navy was told to stand down to pirates for reasons that only George Bush would have understood. Instead of attacking the pirates, they attacked U.S. Marines and court-martialed them. They would rather have seen U.S. Marines hung then blow up a pirate. That started under Bush. Just don't think Obama's so different than Bush in some ways. Not much different, you know. And, of course, when he was pressed on this issue of piracy today, Obama deferred the question. He wouldn't answer it. And we have a giggling Secretary of State. You heard my solution. Flotilla. Convoy system. No ships going out alone. You send them out in groups of five, six, seven. You send one naval warship with them. That's all you really need. You don't even need a convoy anymore. You needed a convoy system to protect them from submarines. Remember that. There are no submarines. They're not using submarines against our ships. So you don't even need more than one asset. I don't want to hear they're too spread too thin. What do they need them over there in Alaska? They did nothing in North Korea but get... What did they do in North Korea, the Navy? Nothing. What? Then the lunatic launched a rocket. The Navy again did nothing. They could have blown up the launch pad. That would have ended the whole charade. Nothing, again, worthless. What do you need them in North Korea for? Put them where you need them. Put one frigate off the coast of Africa and send them to the 72 virgins. That's all. 1,000 yards. Goodbye. Goodbye, Ahmed. Take it. Have a nice day. Have a nice day, Ahmed. Do it two or three times. That's the end of piracy. Over. New York, Frank, WOR. Go ahead, please.
Hello, Michael.
What's on your mind, Frank?
I'd love to get drunk with you some night.
Well, it's not going to be long until you can do it. Well, I'm going to be there before you. The minute this show is over, I got a bottle of tangerine juice at home and a bottle of vodka and some ice, and I'm going right home.
That's all you need. Well, anyway, if I may, please, I'm a three-time wounded Marine combat wounded, just so you know that I've been in situations that can be dangerous, obviously, and I was also in charge of shift security at one time.
Now, wait, Frank, before you go on, are you the Frank from New York who has sent me vinegar over the years and such?
No, actually, I'm from Connecticut.
Okay, you're a different Frank. Okay, go ahead, please.
Yeah, and all this captain had to do was get within 100 yards, 100 feet, whatever he wanted, these pirates, put 8 or 10 Marines on the rail, sharpshooters, most of us are, and tell these guys, look, let the captain go. We're going to blow you out of your socks. Because these aren't your normal Muslims that want to go get 72 virgins and whatever. These guys are in it for the money.
Well, wait a minute. These guys could have been stopped before they came near that merchant ship from 1,000 yards. They could have been taken out, right, Frank?
That's my next comment, which is, as far as any American merchant ships,
yes,
put a contingent of sailors, 6 or 8 sailors with a mounted gun on every ship. Let that.
And what do you need, a 4-inch gun? A smaller than a 4-inch gun can blow them out of the water.
Michael, a 50-caliber machine gun. With the boats that these guys use, a 50-caliber machine gun will shave it down to the waterline in 15 minutes at 1,000 yards.
And let them swim with the sharks after that and say, bye-bye, have a nice day.
Oh, no, you keep shooting until nothing's moving.
Yeah, I spoke to a cop who told me his rules of engagement are, and I'm not going to say where, he tells all of his young men, make sure you kill them before they kill you, number one. Don't think about anything except taking out their computer, which is the item above their neck.
I agree 100%.
And that's how he keeps his young men in his department safe. Unlike in San Francisco, where the police chief and the mayor tell the cops they're good cops if they wind up in a coffin.
My son is a police officer.
Frank, listen to me. I can't take it anymore, Frank. I'm going crazy from pain. I see this man as a naked communist. He is destroying everything of dignity and value in this nation.
I almost gave up my life for this country, and I watched this guy bow to the King of Arabia, who is one of our worst enemies. Excuse me. This guy gives money to all of these organizations that are trying to blow us out of Europe.
Frank, you know, I keep hearing people say, well, I hope that as a result of this, we're going to have like a Jimmy Carter with a Reagan coming along. It's not going to happen. What they don't understand is that Rahm Emanuel, Israeli trained, will never give up power. It's never going to happen, Frank. These people will steal our very freedom itself before the next election. Or they will legalize 30 million illegal aliens. It's the end of the road. If they legalize 30 million illegal aliens, all of whom will vote for a Democrat, we have Castro's Cuba in this country, Frank.
I know that. We're heading down when this guy is saying...
Once he legalizes 30 million illegal aliens from Mexico and Central America, it is the end of freedom in America. They will support anything that this man wants.
Of course. Of course they will.
Well, Frank, why am I the only one who sees this in the media, Frank?
Between the drugs and the illegal aliens running around and killing people and robbing and doing... And there's a lot of good people coming over the border, too, so I don't want to make it look like I'm totally prejudiced to one side.
You know what? I'm sick and tired of qualifying every time we talk about criminals across the border. I'm sick of it. The one statistic that the vermin in the media won't report on is that 1 out of 3 prisoners in our prisons is an illegal alien who either raped or murdered or drunk drove or whatever. 30% of all prisoners are here. 30% of all prisoners are illegal aliens. They didn't come here to work, Frank. They came here to pillage, Frank.
Absolutely.
Thanks, and I'm not going to qualify every time I say this. I'm sick of it. I'm sick of it. 1-800-449-8255. Too late for that in this hour because we have less than a minute to go in this hour on the Savage Nation. Really, tonight, do me a favor after the next hour is over. Go to michaelsavage.com. I don't make a penny if you do. I should charge a penny each visitor, but I don't. If I were a rich man, go to michaelsavage.com and look at the stories. There are some really wonderful links. The most important from my point of view is one you're never going to see anywhere else. And it's from the woman who wrote a blog, a little article for the Miami Herald, about the evils that the Castro brothers have committed. on the shores of Cuba, a once proud nation with proud people with great music that was taken over by these criminals. And by the way, you know nothing about this because the media is complicit in hiding the fact that they are of European descent and they have virtually no Afro-Cubans in the administration.
Savage. Warning. The Michael Savage Show contains adult language, adult content, psychological nudity. Listener discretion is advised. And now, America's most exciting radio talk show, The Savage Nation. Here is Michael Savage.
Here's what I've been talking about today on the Savage Nation. Number one, the Somali pirates. You know, as you've heard, Muslim pirates from Somalia. Oh, yes, Muslim is a critical element to this since they consider you as a dhimmi, a less than human. Pirates did what they know how to do best, which is attack an American merchant ship. They kidnapped the captain. And what is the once great American Navy doing about it? They're tracking the Somalis. Why are we tracking when we should be attacking? In another time, the Navy would have blown the pirates out of the water before they got anywhere near the ship. Since we're at war with these Muslim pirates, then we need to go back to the convoy system we had in World War II. My idea? Be stolen tomorrow by the hemorrhoid with ears, no doubt. Or the golfer. Or the wall banger. Use the carriers of company merchant ships and fire on anyone who comes within 1,000 yards of them. Sink them. Kill them. Speaking of killing, the left-wing vermin children at Brown University have killed Columbus Day. A sophomore, an ethnic sophomore, didn't like Columbus Day. Instead, they're going to be calling it Fall Weekend because they say Christopher Columbus's violent treatment of Native Americans was just too bad. It was inconsistent with Brown's values. Now, the reason they're calling it Fall Weekend is because there are fallen people on Brown University's campus. They have fallen to the level below that of a rat in the gutter. You see, the values of today's college campuses consist of watching porn and learning how to put a condom not on a cucumber, but on a plantain. I believe we could use more Columbus and less plantains. Finally, we talked about Obama bowing to the prince. I mean, it's well known that Obama bowed down to an Arab prince. It was photographed by the media. Then Obama's staff denied it, that it happened. They said, in other words, who are you going to believe, me or your own eyes? Me or the photographs? Sort of like a takeoff on the old joke of the woman who comes home and finds her husband in bed with another woman. He looks at her and says, who are you going to believe, me or your own eyes? In other words, while Obama is, you know what, the American people, he's telling them he's not doing it. It has to be seen if Obama's recent pandering in Europe as apologizer-in-chief will accomplish anything. You all know how he skipped Normandy, yet found time for a visit to Turkey and a stop at a mosque where he took his shoes off. Joining us today is Brigitte Gabriel to talk about Obama's speech in Turkey.
Thank you, Michael. While President Obama recently made a commendable effort to connect with the Islamic world, especially during his visit to Turkey, he went too far by saying things that simply are not accurate and should not have been said. For example, Obama said, quote, "We will convey our deep appreciation for the Islamic faith, which has done so much over so many centuries to shape the world for the better," end quote. Now, I can understand why Obama would not want to say 1,400 years of Islam has resulted in 270 million deaths and countless millions enslaved. But such a history, Michael, hardly qualifies as shaping the world for the better. And he would have been advised to simply not make such a historical, unsupportable statement. Obama also said that he wants to strengthen Ataturk's vision of democratic Turkey. What Mr. Obama, Michael, needs to say to the Muslim world is remind them what Ataturk's vision was, a vision which ended the Islamic Empire in 1924, rebelled against Islam and its Sharia law, and gave women rights to vote, to get an education, to work, etc. It was Ataturk's vision that put the last nail in the coffin of the Islamic Empire, ending centuries of murder and terrorism. It was because of Ataturk's action that the Muslim Brotherhood was founded in Egypt 5 years later to reclaim and revive the Islamic Empire and setting the course for present-day Islamism. The Muslim Brotherhood is now the oldest and largest terrorist organization in the world, boasting 70 offshoots, including Al-Qaeda. In my book, They Must Be Stopped, I detail these important historical facts, Michael, because we must understand the past if we want to have a chance in defeating radical Islam. While Obama eloquently stated that America is not at war with Islam, which was necessary to speak with such clarity, it was also important to continue by saying, however, we are all challenged today by Islamic radicalism that has declared war, not only on America, but also on moderate peace-loving Muslims. Islamism, or the ideology of political Islam, threatens the entire world, including the millions of Muslims who don't adhere to it, and it is growing in strength with every passing day. This is what Obama should have said. Attempting to disconnect terror and radicalism from the political ideology that underlies it is precisely what Western Europe and Great Britain have done without success.
We're speaking with Brigitte Gabriel. Brigitte, you say Obama missed a great chance to reach out to the Muslim world?
Michael, Obama missed a great opportunity to challenge the moderate Muslim world to stand up with us against the Islamists who wish to destroy not only our way of life, but change the political landscape in their own countries through overthrow of their leadership and their government. Such an outreach by Obama would have created solidarity between moderate Muslims and America because moderate Muslims are more likely to hear and respect what Obama has to say due to his Islamic heritage. This was Obama's opportunity to make a statement that could have set the stage for real and historic change, but sadly, he missed it. Meanwhile, North Korea conducts another missile launch, which has enormous ramifications for the world's ability to defeat Islamism. North Korea is doing more than manufacture nuclear weapons for itself. North Korea's business is selling arms technology to the cash-rich Arab nations who provide it with the cash it so desperately needs. A few years ago, North Korea supplied Syria with the nuclear reactor that Israel bombed in September 2007. North Korean engineers were killed and many injured at the Syrian facility during the Israeli bombing. It is just amazing, Michael, how that story went unnoticed without a big hoopla by the media, with the White House saying, quote, no comments. On another Islamist front, Iran is clearly set on attacking Israel and America. Iran is very interested in buying the North Korean missile technology, which they can then deliver an EMP attack, an electromagnetic pulse attack against the United States. So while North Korea may not attack us directly, its technology is what our diehard enemies are going to use to destroy us. The United Nations have proven to be virtually impotent in dealing with such serious issues. Saddam Hussein ignored UN sanctions. North Korea ignores the UN. And Iran marches on, ignoring UN sanctions. The United States need to take a bold step to disrupt the nuclear proliferation axis that exists between North Korea and the militant nations of the Islamic world. We can and should go directly to China and ask them how would they feel if we made nuclear and missile technology available to Japan and Taiwan. We can exert great pressure on China in this area because those two nations are a major threat to China if we make our technology available to them. This will give China a vested interest in pursuing North Korea to stop their missile program. What we are concerned about right now is the political victory that North Korea has achieved with this launch. Even though this was not a military victory because the launch was not successful to the point they expected, it achieved a political victory against America. This message, Michael, is not being wasted on Iran and other nations like Syria and Libya, for example, who are trying to stand up to the United States. America is establishing a clear track record of no response. In 2006, Gaddafi, who signed an agreement in 2003 to get rid of his 30 tons of mustard gas, reneged on the contract and changed his mind after watching America's lack of decisive action against Iran. North Korea is so dangerous because its missiles could carry a nuclear warhead to America, or it could continue to provide the technology to other nations wanting to harm America. In other words, the nuclear threat to America and the West will continue to escalate beyond North Korea to Islamist regimes unless we bring it to a screeching halt. The clock is ticking ever closer to midnight.
Thanks, Brigitte. We're still waiting for the better diplomacy that Obama promised us during his campaign to make a difference. This is the Savage Nation. Savage. Months ago, I told you on the Savage Nation that the U.S. Navy was created in the early 1800s specifically to combat the Barbary pirates that were attacking our merchant ships out of North Africa. Make no mistake about it, these were Muslim pirates, just as the pirates who are attacking our vessels are Muslim pirates. And it seems now that months after I told you these facts, the rest of the media has caught up, because now I'm hearing the same exact lines that I spoke to you on the Savage Nation, ripped off by the hemorrhoid with ears on Fox News Network. But the main point is that Thomas Jefferson created our Navy to confront exactly this kind of situation. And now we seem unable to deal with basic problems that we thought we had solved 200 years ago. Back then we had real statesmen who were willing to take real action. Today we have Hillary Clinton. She's not angrily demanding the release of the captain and threatening to use the full force of the U.S. military to wipe the Somali pirates or the other pirates off the face of the earth. Instead, Hillary's saying that we're going to partner up with other countries in order to feminize the Navy and stop the problem. Let's listen to what Ms. Clinton had to say.
Secretary Gates and I are fully engaged in this matter. We consider it a very serious matter. These people are nothing more than criminals, and we are bringing to bear a number of our assets, including naval and FBI work, in order to resolve the hostage situation and bring the pirates to justice.
What a weakling. What a weakling. We've gone from powering up to partnering up in one generation. And now we hear that the FBI is assisting the U.S. Navy in securing the release of the captain from the pirates. This is not a law enforcement issue. This is a military issue. We don't need the FBI. We need the real U.S. Navy. We need combat. We need to retaliate against these Muslim vermin with full military force to let them know that they cannot do this. But instead, it seems that we have an administration in place that would rather walk the plank instead of pulling rank. Let's have some pirate music.
15 men on a dead man's chest, yo-ho-ho and a bottle of rum. Drink and the devil had done for the rest. Yo ho ho and a bottle of rum. Bottle of rum. Bottle of rum.
The Navy versus the pirates. How the mighty have fallen. For the first time in 200 years, a U.S. merchant vessel has been taken by pirates. Now, the brave American crew of this merchant vessel, the Alabama, was able to overpower the pirates and retake the ship, but in the process, the pirates escaped with the captain, Richard Phillips. There are many questions which this incident raises. First of all, why was the crew on board this vessel not armed to prevent this sort of hijacking? I heard a reporter say that the ships were given water cannons to defend themselves with. That's wonderful. Maybe our merchant fleet in the U.S. Navy can start arming themselves not with water cannons, which are quite violent, But water balloons use a technique from Harvard University. Water balloons thrown at the Muslim pirates in order to gently discourage the Muslim enemies from attacking our ships. And on top of that, some idiot ship owner whose boat was taken over last year got on Fox News Network and said that these crews shouldn't be armed. Let's listen to what this moron had to say.
Well, you don't want to escalate it. You don't want to turn it into the Wild West. And remember, these are crew members who are trained to operate a ship, not military actions. You don't want to arm them to the teeth.
Unbelievable. With idiots like this in positions of power, it's no wonder that these pirates sense weakness and prey on our vessels. A second key question here is, what is the U.S. government and Navy going to do to stop the situation? Well, at this point, the Navy has sent a destroyer, USS Bainbridge, to track the boat that the pirates are holding. Well, what has happened to what was once the most powerful Navy in the world? During his presidency, Theodore Roosevelt, who talked softly but carried a big stick, sent the Great White Fleet of the United States on a tour around the world. He displayed American sea power openly so that pirates and petty dictators would fear to attack us. And now we just track our enemies instead of attacking our enemies. It seems that our Navy has become nothing more than an extended form of welfare, so that certain groups in our country can have better access to health care and pregnancy care on the ships. Oh, how the mighty have fallen. The important thing for you to understand is we have no government to protect us at this time. The fact of the matter is Muslim pirates were pirating U.S. cargo ships back in the 1700s. And as a result, the United States Navy created its first warship. And what you don't understand is that it's written in the Quran that all nations which had not acknowledged the Prophet were sinners, whom it was the right and duty of the faithful to plunder and enslave. Now, that's not contemporary writing. That is the writing of the U.S. ambassador of the time, when we had real men, real Americans who believed in America, really. All right, here's what's on michaelsavage.com, the website you've all learned to go to as often as you do to Drudge and all the other sites. This is a shocker. Obama tries out role as apologizer in chief. That's from the Washington Times. According to the Washington Times, America, according to President Obama, is an occasionally arrogant nation struggling with shameful legacies of racism and discrimination, and that we should be apologetic. Yeah, right. From the NYT, UK's top anti-terror chief, the moron, was forced to resign amid security breach. You won't believe this. The schmuck came out of an armored car to go into a security meeting, and he was photographed carrying secret documents on an ongoing terrorist investigation, forcing a launch of raids 12 hours ahead of schedule. Let me add a little bit more to that. This Scotland Yard Bob Quick really belongs with the Canadian Mounties, because it looks to me like he was, well, being mounted or being a Mountie somewhere, I don't know. He must have been drunk, this red-faced old stew bum.
Savage.
The pirate problem is not going to go away with a few fancy words and a pretty please thrown on top of it. These pirates don't use diplomacy. They only understand power. Joining us now is former PLO terrorist Waleed Shubat, who understands these pirates better than most. Waleed, welcome back to the Savage Nation.
Thank you, Michael, for having me again in the show.
What's the story behind the hijacking?
The Mazrik Alabama was headed to Mombasa, Kenya, with a load of relief supplies. How typical is this? America is freeing Africans, and they take our ship and crew hostage. This ship was regarding aid to Africa, yet Muslims are basically robbing the ship from the aid that's going to their own people.
Why was the ship targeted?
Well, Americans need to understand that jihad comes in three apparatuses: financial jihad, political jihad, and the actual war itself. In Islam, there is what is called jihad al-mal, which means financial jihad. The U.S. offensive against terrorism has succeeded in reducing the extent of global terrorism through attacking the financial apparatus of the jihadists. Saudi Arabia and other Gulf states remain the most significant source of funds flowing to the Islamic movement. Hamas still is funded by Saudi petrodollars. yet these funds are diminishing. The World Assembly of Muslim Youth and the International Islamic Relief Organization are active in transferring these funds. There is jihad, as I mentioned before, in the tongue, which is the political jihad, the self-jihad, and the jihad itself. So this is part of this financial apparatus to support the mujahideen in Somalia. In fact, the Quran supports this view, in which the Quran states, go forth light-armed and heavy-armed and strive with your wealth and your lives in the way of Allah. That is the best for you if ye but knew. This is from Surah At-Tawbah, Repentance, chapter 4, verse 41. Now, all Islamic scholars are unanimous in their interpretation of these verses regarding the centrality and importance of financial jihad as part of Allah's jihad commandment to Muslims.
Who do you think was behind the hijacking?
Well, I think there is an organization called Al-Shahab, which is a terror organization group that has close ties to Al-Qaeda. Experts say some of the businessmen and warlords who commanded the pirates are also funding the rebels. Al-Qaeda has used the Horn of Africa, and particularly Somalia, as a refuge from U.S. and NATO forces in Afghanistan. It is the perfect hide site for Islamic militants. The Somali government is weak currently. The population is poor as well. And Somalia warlords have been fighting each other over in civil wars for decades. This is the perfect breeding ground for terrorism and piracy. The combination of Islamic militancy and few prospects for resources forces them to do this.
What lessons should be learned from this?
Perhaps my fellow Americans should heed to a lesson from their own history. It is noteworthy to mention that Americans need to know that it was the struggle with Islam that caused the loss of access to the Black Sea, and Europe was deprived as well of the land route to India. The search for a new sea route brought about the oversea discoveries of the New World, and this is how America basically was born. We had a struggle with Islam in the past, and they had to find new routes. Because the American commerce in the Mediterranean was being destroyed by the pirates, the Continental Congress agreed in 1784 to negotiate treaties with the four Barbary states. Congress appointed a special commission consisted of John Adams, Thomas Jefferson, and Benjamin Franklin to oversee the negotiations. Lacking the ability to protect its merchant ships in the Mediterranean, the new American government tried to appease the Muslim slavers by agreeing to pay tribute in accordance to the Quran, حَتَّى يَدْفَعُ الْجِزْيَةَ عَنْ يَدٍ وَهُمْ صَاغِرُونَ. This is from the Quran, that non-believers must pay a jizya tax tribute to Muslims for protection. And this is why they were in history taking American ships, and this is why they're doing this now. Now, historically, Adam argued in favor of paying tribute as the cheapest way to get American commerce in the Mediterranean moving again. Jefferson, however, was opposed. He believed there would be no end to the demands for tribute and wanted matters settled through the medium of war. He proposed a league of trading nations to force an end to this Muslim piracy. In 1786, Jefferson, then the American ambassador who was to France, and Adams, then the American ambassador to Britain, met in London with Sidi Hajj Abdurrahman Hajjah, the Bey of Algiers. And this is very interesting because during these meetings, Adams asked the Bey, the Muslim ambassador, why Muslims held so much hostility towards America, a nation that had nothing to do with them. Ambassador Sidi Hajjah basically said, and I quote, Islam was founded on the laws of their prophet, that it was written in their Quran that all nations who should not have acknowledged their authority were sinners, that it was their right and duty to make war upon them wherever they could be found, and to make slaves of all they could take as prisoners, and that every Muslim who should be slain in battle was sure to go to paradise. Isn't that the same message that we get from the Islamists today? History is simply repeating itself. Yet historically, the following 15 years, the American government paid the Muslims millions of dollars. In fact, most Americans do not know that 20% of the United States government annual revenues had to go to please the pirates. Jefferson had enough with it, and he declared war on the pirates. In fact, this is where they began to establish the Navy and the Marines, the USS Constitution, USS Constellation, USS Philadelphia, Chesapeake, Argus, Cyrene, and USS Intrepid saw action and was created as a result of fighting this piracy. And this is why the Marines was born, and this is why the Marines sing the song from the halls of Montezuma to the shores of Tripoli. We will fight our country's battles on the land as on the sea.
How do you feel we should be dealing with these radical Islamist threats?
We should deal with the Islamist threat as we dealt with it in the past. It wasn't until 1815 that the problem was fully settled by the total defeat of all Muslim slave traders. Yet the problem today is that Obama is twisting the EU to accept Turkey into the EU. And the Islamists are looking towards Turkey because Turkey is where the caliphate was dismantled. Yet the American administration thinks that Turkey is a moderate Muslim state. In fact, Erdogan, the prime minister of Turkey, made it very clear. He said, you cannot be a Muslim and secular at the same time. The world is waiting. 1.5 billion Muslims are waiting for the Turkish people to rise up. In fact, they had... Erdogan is loved very much in the Arab world. They are planning to open an Arab television station for the Arabs to watch. They were very happy as he walked out in the debate with Shimon Peres during the Gaza fiasco. Turkey right now is being entertained, and the Islamist movement in Turkey has entered into the government system. We have the AKP, which won the election, and we have a belligerent President Barack Obama, who declares that the United States' image of belligerence has to end. Yet he himself, with full belligerence, is attempting to force the EU to accept Turkey into the EU, which will create an influx of 70 million into the European states, which will rise the Islamic citizenship up to 10%. All is these societies, when the Muslim community reached to 10 to 15%, they are mandated to fight and to reestablish an Islamic hegemony. Americans need to wake up to the true matter and to the true problem.
Thanks, Waleed. We need to learn from our own history on how to react, or I'm sure these attacks will escalate and never end. I'll be back.
Savage.
Radical left under Obama uses the argument of separation of church and state to ban the Bible from even being mentioned in public places, although the same can't be said of Islam or their leftist communist totalitarian ideals. Joining us today is Selwyn Duke to talk about this false separation.
Hi, Michael. It's great to be with you again. Michael, the last time I was on the show, I talked about how the left will try to read freedom of speech out of the First Amendment. Well, today I want to discuss a related topic— how the left has successfully read the separation of church and state into the First Amendment. Now, the great philosopher G.K. Chesterton once said, "Religious liberty might be supposed to mean that everybody is free to discuss religion. In practice, it means that hardly anybody is allowed to mention it." Amazingly, he said that more than 75 years ago. And today the situation is far worse, as we all know. Social engineers led by ne'er-do-wells in groups such as the ACLU, that would be the American Communist Lawyers Union, by the way, these social engineers have been stripping the public square of historically present religious symbols and sentiments for a long time now. They've used the courts to strip religious images off city seals, get crosses and the Ten Commandments removed from public property. They have gotten schools to prohibit religious expression in student artwork and prayer before football games. And some schools have eliminated Christmas hymns. One even changed the lyrics of Silent Night to Cold in the Night, believe it or not.
Yeah, while all this is happening, leftists have not only been replacing Judeo-Christian morality in schools with secular values, they're also sometimes trying to introduce Islam.
Right you are, Michael. In fact, I remember a story a while back about how a California school district had actually instituted, get this, an Islamic immersion course. And all this is done in the name of the separation of church and state. Now, what's ironic is that the separation of church and state isn't actually in the Constitution. No, it's the result of a leftist misinterpretation by a Franklin Roosevelt-authored activist court in 1947, more than 150 years after our nation's birth. Up until then, the First Amendment's Establishment Clause had never been twisted to mean the separation of church and state. It only meant that the central government couldn't establish a national church, because that's what the Founding Fathers feared. But did they fear religion in the public square? No. States had established churches at the time of the nation's founding. The Founding Fathers opened Congress with prayers. Our second president, John Adams, said in 1798, "Our Constitution was made only for a moral and religious people. It is wholly inadequate to the government of any other." And we had legal prayer in schools till 1962. So, does it sound like the founders were hostile to public displays of religiosity? Huh?
But wait, Selwyn. I'm sure that ACLU lawyer Ruth Bader Ginsburg knows a lot more about the Constitution than the men who only wrote it.
Yeah, Michael. Well, she's someone who wouldn't know the Constitution from the Communist Manifesto, let me tell you. Now, the question is, though, how'd we degenerate to a point where God was kicked out of the public square? Well, for starters, we forgot that this is a cultural battle at bottom, not ultimately a legal one. And consequently, it must be won on the moral level. Because look, we can make legal arguments all we want, but the left will just offer a different interpretation of the Constitution, or say it's a living document. They love that term. We can cite history, but the left will say times change. The truth is that secularists have prevailed in the court of public opinion, with most Americans convinced that religion should be given the cold shoulder in the public arena. And, as Abraham Lincoln said, with public sentiment, nothing can fail. Without it, nothing can succeed. So, let's examine how we can debate this issue on the philosophical level. And I'll now show you how to win the separation of church and state debate every time. Just start by asking your friendly neighborhood atheist this question. If the given ideas really have been handed down by God, the creator of the universe, don't you have an obligation to infuse your every institution, including the public ones, with them? Don't you have an obligation to instill them in children in as well as out of school? Now, this is where the atheist may look at you like you could double your IQ with one serving of fish, and then maybe say something like, "Well, that's what you believe, but not everyone agrees with you. These beliefs might just be man-made." Well, you know what? From here, checkmate is easy. Simply respond. If religious ideas are man-made just like secular ones, why do you discriminate against them? Why do you insist that man-made ideas we happen to call secular may enter the public square, but man-made ideas we happen to call religious may not? If they're all man-made, what's the difference?
Well, that can really put the secularists in a box and transform the argument.
Well, absolutely, Michael. Because this not only eliminates the assumption that religious ideas must be excluded from the public arena, it actually affords them superior status. After all, if they're man-made, they're on the same plane as secular ideas and can be in public institutions. And what if such ideas are authored by God? What then? Then they must be in public institutions. There's no way around it. Now, this simple outside-the-box argument eludes most because modern man is blinded from truth by terminology. We hear about religious ideas and secular ideas and accept the categorizations, but there really are only two categories of ideas in the world that matter: correct ideas and incorrect ideas. After all, if God truly exists, what's most significant? That we call such an idea religious or that it's correct? If communist ideas are fallacious, is it most significant that we call them secular or that they're incorrect? Think about it. And to place this in further perspective, and this is very important, understand that the term secularism in the modern irreligious sense wasn't first recorded until 1846. It was that late in history. For most of man's history, people weren't likely to labor under the illusion that there were two separate and completely unrelated categories of principles: religious morality and secular values. And the truth is that, in a very real way, the distinction between religious and secular is a false one. Because again, the only relevant factor is whether an idea is correct or incorrect. Moreover, for there to be right and wrong in a real sense, there must be absolute truth.
Of course, since leftists are governed by their feelings, they'll just say they're offended and that we should keep our faith to ourselves.
Yeah, Michael, that's right. At this point, they'll be reduced to the argument that religious ideas are uniquely offensive, whatever that's supposed to mean. But this is a non-starter, because offensiveness is subjective. And secularists do understand this. I mean, they're the first ones to claim that what's offensive is completely subjective when, let's say, defending pornography, one of their favorite things. Look, the fact is that most everything offends someone, and most everyone is offended by something. And you can't tell me when I am or am not offended. And I also have to mention something else. This is a dirty little secret. When liberals scream about being offended, you know what? It's just a ploy. They're not usually offended by religion. They just don't happen to like it. It's called intolerance, something they usually preach against. Now, I'm telling everyone these things because I want you to understand that we've been conned. Conned into accepting an irrational, philosophically unsound brand of discrimination. Atheists have cleverly created a false dichotomy between the religious and the secular, and then conned us into believing that what we call religious ideas deserve second-class status. These ideas have been relegated to the back of the bus. We accept that religious ideas should be stricken from the public square without regard for whether they're right or wrong simply because of a label people have attached to them. It's no different than, you know what, than saying we won't judge a candidate on the quality of his ideas, no, only on the color of his skin. Now, why does all this matter? Well, because there's no such thing as a value-neutral system, that's why. It's just a question of whose values will prevail. For instance, all the ideologies we find in our schools, multiculturalism, feminism, radical environmentalism, they all involve values. And they are values that are offensive to millions, just as Judeo-Christian values can be. And they are real. They're dogmas. And they're being taught to the young. And the mythical separation of church and state is being used to grease the skids for them. It's being used to eliminate the godly. And I ask you, think about this. If you eliminate the godly when teaching children, what is left to place in their minds and hearts? Michael, thank you for having me on today. And since there's no separation of church and show on the Savage Nation, I'll say, God bless you and your audience.
Thanks, so when the separation of church and state is leading us away from the very morality that a nation was built on and is going to lead our nation to total disaster.
Savage.